Good morning and welcome back to Nahiyomi. Today we're going to be learning Nehemiah Perek Beis, the second chapter of the book of Nehemiah. As you remember in the first Perek, we heard of how Nehemiah has heard the news that Yerushalayim is in a very disturbed state. It is in a state where its doors are burned down, its walls are broken, and he was fasting. He calls out to Hashem and he prays. What actually happens after that? So here's our Perek. The first 9 psukim, we hear about Nehemiah's mission. He describes how it's in the month of Nisan. Notice, by the way, that the months of the year now are being described in the Persian calendar, the Babylonian Persian names. We've heard about Kislev and Nisan. These are the names that we use today. But prior to this, while Israel was still in the land of Israel, they were actually calling it first month, second month, based on the count from Nisan. So this is a new calendar. It's in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes, the king, and he describes how he is bringing wine in front of him. And I was not bad in front of him. Meaning, it seems like he says I was in a good mood in front of him. But the king turns to him and says, "Mado ponecho ra'im? Why is your face bad? You're not sick. Ein zekim roya lev." He says, "This must be. There's a badness in the heart." And Nehemiah admits that he was very scared. Maybe the way he was looking would be seen as treachery. So he turns to the king and he says, No, Yichyeh HaMelech, let the king live. And he says, the reason is because how can I have a happy face when the base Kivros Abosai Chareva, the graveyards of my ancestors, is destroyed, Ushareah Uklu Va'esh, and its gates are burnt in fire? So the king says to him, what do you want? And he, in the middle of this conversation, Nehemiah describes how he prays to Hashem, the God of the heavens, which means in the middle of the conversation. You can imagine this is such an important teaching moment, is that in the most important of moments in life, when one is under the most pressure, that's the time specifically to be davening. And he turns to the king and he says, if it's all right with you, maybe you can send me to the area of Yehuda and allow me to fortify the areas around the burial plots of my ancestors. And the king says, "So, well, how much do you need? Like, how much time do you need there?" And at this point in time, the fact that he was asking how much time shows that the king really wants to send him. So he was very, very pleased. And he says, he gives a specific amount of time, a number of years that he thinks would be necessary. And he asks for 2 things. He asks for letters that are going to be sent to the Pachos. Those are the governors of Aver and Nahar, that's in the area of Syria, which will give him passage to Yehuda, and he wants a letter to Asaf, the Shomer Pardes, which is the one in charge of the forests of the king, in order to give him the wood necessary to build the gates. And it describes how he comes and he presents this letter, and they give him Chayil Uprashim, they give him a armed escort. So just a few points to bear in mind while considering these first 9 psukim of the Perek is it's interesting that the first Perek occurs during the month of Kislev of the 20th year of Artaxerxes. This is now in Nisan in the first year of Artaxerxes. So usually speaking, the year begins with Nisan. That's the new count for the year. That's the first month. So why is this considered the 20th year still if it's in the month of Nisan? So Rav Sadia Gaon points out, well, that's because we count from the month of Nisan, but the Persians count from Tishrei, or at least another time in the year, which means that it's still the 20th year of his rule. It seems that he's worried. It's a little contradictory in this parak if you think about it. He says that he's not worried, but now the king says that he does look worried. So what is it? So Rashi says, what he's saying is, in general, he was able to mask his difficult moods and hard days, but this time the emotions were overtaking him to a degree that he couldn't fully mask it. So the first description is the general, and now is what the king is noticing specifically now because of his emotions about the news from Yehuda. The Malbim says it a little bit differently, and that is that he was masking to the very best of his ability his emotions, yet because he was fasting, the physical effects of fasting could not be masked, and that's what the king was noticing. Whichever way we look at it, the Malbim does point out that we need to realize this is direct divine providence. This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowing him the opportunity to enter this conversation without him being the one to use his political clout to be able to start the conversation. What ancestors is he referring to in the burial ground? So it is true, if you go to Har HaZesem at the very bottom of the Kidron Valley there, you'll see that there are graves, even from the times of the first Beis Hamikdash, Yad Avshalom, Yad Zachariah, which are there. So it is true that there are the ancestral burial grounds right outside the walls of Jerusalem. But At the same time, it is important, the Malbim points out that this wasn't so much about his ancestors as much as that he knows that in Persian tradition, the burial plot cemeteries are of sacred value. So it's something which will trigger the necessary permission in the king's mind. Why does he need these letters? So it seems that there's two sets of letters. The first is for an armed escort, and the second one is for access for supplies. Whether the armed escort is to get through the land of Syria to Israel, or whether it's to be in the land of Israel because of the Tzara Yehuda Binyamin, as we're going to see, as the enemies, is a matter of debate between the Ralbag and the Malbim. But be it as a man, that's what he asks. What is interesting to note, by the way, is what he does not ask for. He does not ask for, as we've seen in the previous eras of Ezra and before, he does not ask for an edict giving him permission to build the walls in the same way that they asked about building the base of Mikdash. He just seems to want to have the basic wherewithal, and he's going to take it on his own. Whether he doesn't feel he has enough political capital for this or not, not clear. Nehemiah then goes in the next six psukim from Yud to Tezvav. We hear about his nightly survey. What happens is that he's about to arrive, Sanballat from Choran and Tovia from Ammon hear about the arrival of Nehemiah, and they're quite upset about this because this is a good move for Israel. He arrives in Jerusalem, he spends 3 days there, and at night he gets up in a small crew of people and he goes and he performs this nightly survey of the walls of Jerusalem, and describes how he goes out of the Shar Hagai, and it seems to be, there's a debate as to where this exactly is, but it sounds like it's a southeasterly survey of the walls of Jerusalem. And one of the complicated words that is used over here is Va'ahi Sover Bechomos Jerusalem. I was Sover, which could mean to either perhaps take a look at, or to break, if it's maybe Shover as another way, a modality of that word. And he sees they're all broken, and he returns that night, and he returns to where he is in the city. The Mepharshim point out that he leaves from the area where his house is, which is the gate closest to his house. Okay, Be'ezameh. Who are Sanballat and Tovia? Just to contemplate the section, the Da'at Mikra points out Sanballat is the governor of the Shomronim, and Tovia is the governor of the Ammonim. So these are the neighboring, we'll call it local politicians, who are concerned about Yerushalayim getting beefed up. Why is this all at night? What is the whole plan here? What is he at? The Malbim understands that this is a survey. He's trying to work out the real security needs of the city. But if he's going to do this in a daytime entourage, everybody's going to notice, especially the enemies, and they're going to start their problems already now, as we're going to see they are going to imminently. That being the case, he wanted to get a head start on doing the survey at night. You remember, this is without floodlights and flashlights, and it's not such an easy job to do, but nonetheless, that's what he wanted to do, to get a head start on this. There's another intriguing suggestion that Rashi suggests, and this was not a survey at all. This was actually subterfuge. He was going out, and it is actually to break the walls. So he needed night as a cover, not to do any surveying. It's very hard to survey at night, rather to actually create more damage so that in the morning he can make his plea to the leaders of the city to actually go about and do the necessary work. Okay, let's go, Leila. We get back to the Psukim. Psukim, it tests Zion to Yudches. Teach us how the next morning he pulls, then most of the Saganim do not know what had happened at night, and he pulls them all together, and he tells them, and he says to them, look, Yerushalayim is destroyed, its gates are burned down, let's build the city. And he says that, Hashem is going to be with us. I know I have permission. Avdivrei HaMelech Asher Amar Li. Vayamru nokum vaninu vaychazku yadeim hadlatovai, and he strengthens their hands. Psukim you tested to chav, the last two psukim of the 20 psuk pasuk perik. It's Sanballat and Tovia, and now another hanger on whose name is Geshen Aravi. So we have now a Shomroni, a Ammoni, and a Arab who join together, and they vayal igulonu, and they start mocking us. And remember, Nehemiah is describing this all in first person because he's describing what's happening to us and to me. And they say, are you rebelling against the king? And he responds to them by saying, no, Hashem, God of the heavens, is going to make us succeed. And we as his servants are going to build it, and you are not going to have any tzedakah or zikaron b'Yerushalayim. You'll have no mention or charity in Jerusalem. So what is going on here? Well, like what's the conversation? So the way the Malbim explains it is, of course, he told them that he had earthly mandate from Artaxerxes, the king of Persia, but he's adding on as well that he also has divine mandate, and that's what's being impressed upon them in this conversation. The Rabbag says that actually what's happening over here is that their claim was oh, you're building the walls of Jerusalem, it must be that you're rebelling against the king, which was the old claim. Anytime they want to fortify the walls of Jerusalem, that was the claim. Remember, this serves their best interest because they're interested in showing that they're rebelling against the Persians, whereas they just want to be able to have no walls so that they can penetrate and to loot the city whenever they wanted to. But it works well in their interests. What the Ralbag carries on to explain is that there is an implicit request in their threat, and that is that they really want to be part of this. They want to have a foothold in Jerusalem when it's being made, like we saw in the round one in Sefer Ezra, where the Tzarei Yehuda and Binyamin also asked to partake in the building. And what is clear from the answer of Nehemiah is, you're not going to have a zikaron or tzedakah in the city. You're going to nothing. You're not going to even have a donations. We're not going to accept anything from you because this is from God. This is primarily a theological fight as well as a political one. With this, we close Perek Beis. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.